Red Business with IBEC, building a sustainable competitive future in Cork business.
Hi there and thanks for joining us. Lots to come on this episode. We've got great news from Cork Airport we're going to talk about in just a moment. A couple from Ballincollig who are making some of the finest chocolate around and how they're doing it. And we'll check in with IBEC as well. But it does appear that Cork Airport is going to be really busy next summer. Ryanair have just announced that there's going to be another aircraft base there, opening up new opportunities both for holidaymakers and indeed for people who are just looking at travelling elsewhere off this island after COVID. Brian Gallagher is the head of aviation and commercial business development with Cork Airport. He's with me now. Hiya, Brian.
Hi, Jonathan. How are you keeping?
I'm very well. We met at that tourism event that featured on last week's podcast, and you kind of hinted that there was something coming, but obviously that it had to take your ankles if you told us. But it was good news, and it's about Ryanair. Tell us more.
It absolutely is, Jonathan. And yeah, look, I did promise you there was something coming, but you know the name of the game. It's never over the line until it's over the line.
Yeah.
But listen, it's been a fantastic announcement by Ryanair today. Essentially, they are bringing a third based unit into Cork, so a third aircraft serving a host of new routes. We're going to be up to 25 routes this coming summer. It's actually going to be, amazingly enough, our largest ever Ryanair capacity from Cork this coming summer. So it's a really, really tremendous announcement for us coming out of COVID-19.
And people will hear the size of the investment. It's $100 million. That's a sizable investment by any airline, and it's you know, just because it's Ryanair who are there already, we shouldn't be turning our nose up at it in any way. It's great news.
Oh, it's absolutely enormous, you know, and I mean, that 100 million, that basically is the price of one of those Boeing aircrafts if you buy them off the shelf. So Ryanair has decided that Cork is where it's going to put its investment, and we reap the benefits from that.
Yeah, okay, well, now bear in mind, this podcast goes live on the day when we've just had another really bad winter storm. So let's fast forward to the summer. Where can I go, Brian?
Well, you have a whole host of destinations to go to, but, you know, joining some of the classics that we would have had, like the London routes and some of the UK routes and the, you know, the Malagas and the Faroes. We have some really interesting ones now joining us for this summer. So Venice, which was already announced, starts this summer. But the brand new routes that we announced today with Ryanair are Pisa, Alghero, which is in Sardinia, and Valencia.
OK, and some of those destinations, I don't think we've ever been able to go to Sardinia from Cork before, can we?
No, never before. So this is a brand new adventure for us all. And look, Irish people need to get a bit of sun. And as we said today, warm up their bones a little bit. So we think this is going to be a really interesting route as well for everyone.
Ryanair and any airport, often they'd have a fight from time to time. And there's an adjustment of the levers with Ryanair pulling airlines and pulling destinations. You guys seem to be in a very good place with them at the moment, based on the number of routes out of Cork with Ryanair.
Absolutely. Look, I mean, Ryanair is the customer at the end of the day, and the customer will always be looking for the best price for the best service and product. So I think that's a reasonable ask from any customer. But we're very glad to be very close partners to Ryanair. And especially now, coming out of what has been a really difficult 2 years, I mean, you want to be working with your customers to deliver recovery, because it is recovery. It's not growth anymore. It's literally recovering from what 2 years of very turbulent flying in the industry, you know.
And when we look at the overall number of airlines, how many airlines are we talking now? Because I was counting last week when you were speaking on stage. I think we've actually got more airlines than we've ever had flying out of Cork, have we?
Well, we certainly have more foreign carriers anyway. We have the widest range of the big European flag carriers. So look, Air France and Swiss were with us before COVID-19. But we have to remember that, you know, since COVID-19, we had KLM, which is now a very large carrier of Cork. They launched in August 2020, right in the height of the challenges. And then we had Lufthansa and Vueling join us last year then as well. So we've got the big European brands now operating into Cork alongside our long-standing partners, Ryanair and Aer Lingus.
When the world gets back to normal, people will look again to Cork for those connections. If you spoke to the business community prior to COVID, it was the lack of connectivity. Yeah, we had Heathrow and we had Amsterdam, but they were all rammed, and there was the odd flight to Paris before Air France came in. We've got really good connections now with those airlines. So for people looking to travel long haul, there's the opportunity just to connect via Amsterdam, to connect via Paris, to connect via London. All of these are really positive as we're trying to sell Cork post-COVID.
That's exactly right, Jonathan. You've hit the nail on the head. I mean, we have a good range, I would say a very reasonable range of routes across Europe that you can get to directly. And then for any long haul connectivity or more difficult routes to get, you know, you've got Heathrow, which we always had, but then you've got some fantastic connectivity over Amsterdam with KLM. We've got Paris with Air France. You now have Frankfurt with Lufthansa, and also some of the other ones that you might not have even thought of. You know, Swiss, for instance, over Zurich. Swiss has an enormous route network out of Zurich. So there's connectivity options everywhere. And look, my mission is to stop people traveling up the road to our big sister airport in Dublin Airport and keep them flying out of Cork. And I think the hub connectivity, that's the way to do that.
Numbers wise this year, again, nobody's saying anything with confidence just yet, Brian, because we don't know whether there's a sting in any tail of COVID, and we are living with it as opposed to having gotten rid of it. But numbers wise for 2022, are you going to get close to 2 million? Will you hit 3 million? Have you any bet that you could cast right now on it?
Well, I certainly wouldn't be hitting 3 million for another little while. Give me another year or so, Jonathan, and I'll get you back up there. But, you know, earlier this week, we were seeing around 70% recovery versus 2019. So that would have been about just under 1.8 million. I think on foot of today's announcement by Ryanair, we should be looking at in excess of 2 million for the year. So we're probably at the higher end of 70%, 75, 77%, that kind of recovery this year, which again, 6 weeks ago was looking further and further away from what we are. And you're absolutely right. I you know, I'm sure COVID-19 is going to have one or two more unwelcome surprises for us, but we seem to be able to manage this a lot better than before. I mean, the Omicron hit was probably done in about 4 to 6 weeks overall. It unfortunately hit us at Christmas, which would have been a fantastic Christmas period, I think, otherwise for travel. But look, With every turn comes a new challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll face it on. We faced down the last ones. We'll face down whatever comes next. But it's good news now. Those seats are available already on the Ryanair website if you're looking for them, not to mention all the other carriers. Brian Gallagher, Head of Aviation and Commercial Business Development at Cork Airport. Thanks for taking the time. Best of luck to you.
Thanks so much, Jonathan.
Red Business with IBEC, building a sustainable, competitive future for Cork business.
Now, if you're a Red Business listener with a sweet tooth, you're going to enjoy our next item. Lusso is a chocolate company based in Ballincollig, like so many other brilliant businesses. It began its story in someone else's spare time. In this particular case, Carol Barry was working for Family Events, as well as working her day job as a food operations manager. Over the following 15 years, Lusso then moved from Carol's kitchen to a commercial kitchen beside her parents' house, then to a commercial unit in Ballincollig, and then they have a great portfolio of products out there now as well. In the middle of that, she met another fella called Ian, and their story continues. Carol and Ian, how are you?
All good. Thanks for having us on, Jonathan. Thanks for the opportunity.
It's lovely to talk
to
you.
Very good, Jonathan. Thank you.
Carol Barry and Ian Kerrigan. Carol, it's a great story. I mean, this started like a hobby by the sound of it.
Pretty much, yeah. I suppose, like, my background has always been in the hospitality and the catering sector. I was a chef by trade, and I suppose moved along with it and found a passion for all things sweet, and started doing family events, and it just kind of rolled on from there. And I started doing catering events and decided to keep my house lovely and clean, and moved in with the folks to their side of their house, and they were very willingly came with two very handy washer-uppers at the time. So, I mean, without their support, I couldn't have moved anyway forward like it has done. So it's been down to them, really, forgive me the push, really. And I suppose, yeah, years on, met Ian and said, okay, let's do this.
Right, and was it the chocolate that attracted you, Ian, or what was it?
Oh, no, it was her glowing personality at the time.
The chocolate was a happy byproduct.
That's it, yeah, the chocolate was definitely a happy boss.
Tell us a little bit about it, because I'm guessing your background isn't in food operations as Carol's was, so you're a kind of a newbie to all of this, are you?
Well, no, I was a newbie at the time to the dessert side of it, but I was actually in the catering industry for 20 years before that myself, in bars, restaurants and kitchens as well.
Okay, but there's a marriage made in heaven. You were connected straight away. you had a way of doing it. But Carol, chocolate is tricky to make, isn't it? Because we eat a lot of it, but it's not easy to actually put it all together.
Well, you know, I suppose it's like everything else, you know, you get quite used to it, and you get, you know, I mean, so the eating side of it doesn't even bother us anymore. But yeah, it certainly is a science to it. It goes too much, so through so many processes. But it's gorgeous to see. I mean, you do get great finished products at the end of it, and like it is a dream to work with. Except on hot days.
Yes.
And that's when it comes to challenge.
Yes, it literally melts in your hand, which is one of the advantages and disadvantages of chocolate. What's different about Lusso though, Ian? Because there's lots of different types of chocolate out there. I mean, you could have anything you want, really. What makes your product stand out?
I think outside of the fact that our main focus is always on quality, and we use very high quality chocolate. We only use the best ingredients where we can. But I think a huge thing that stands out for us was always the majority of products that we sell, especially all year round for the chocolate side of it and Easter or Christmas predominantly, we personalise everything. So you can come in and get an egg for your daughter, you can get a bunny for your husband or son or anything else. And also as well at Christmas time there, people love giving. We do a chocolate 3D moulded boot. And people love giving people the boot at Christmas, so that's a very popular item then. So I think a lot of it is personalization and our customer service. And one, I suppose, a huge thing we always focus on is the customer service we give behind it. We have very loyal customers. We have a great team behind us, so it's something that puts us aside from the rest. It's not just picked off a shelf.
Yeah,
every single thing is handmade by us here.
And obviously, chocolate and Easter go together really, really well. But Easter 2020, I'm presuming, like everybody else, you'll remember that one for a long time.
Don't think we'll ever forget it.
No, we won't forget that. We were, because I think we all, the same as everyone else in this industry, we all got the phone calls and the changes on the 16th of March. And at that stage, we were well underway for production for Easter. So we had a lot prepared and a lot made at the time. But unfortunately, COVID played its hand and things changed. So we just had to deal with it at the time.
Was that an existential crisis, Carol? Because there you were, small business. You were heading for what you thought was going to be busy, but you ended up having stock left. Nightmare scenario.
Well, you know, I suppose it was at the time, and I suppose, you know, and it was very frightening for everyone at the time. So we felt we had to do the right thing. So I suppose our first and foremost thing was to look after the staff. So, you know, so we initially did an immediate close down. But yeah, there was thousands of euros worth of products made. You know, we certainly didn't want them to go to waste. So Ian got into our lovely little Lusso van and drove around all around Cork and just gave them away.
Wow.
No, we'd very happy people at the end of it, but it was the right thing to do. It was a scary process to all of us at the time. We didn't know what we were facing into. So yeah, so the, you know, of course there was going to be a lot of waste, but there was a lot of people enjoyed the products.
Yeah,
so they didn't go to waste.
There was a lot of people very happy at a time when not many people were particularly cheerful. Look, when you look at it now, was that an opportunity? Was it, speaking of the getting the boot for Christmas, was that the boot she needed to move online, Carol?
It absolutely was. I suppose, you know, I mean, because we were a small team here, we have some absolutely fantastic accounts that are very loyal to us, but they were now closed. So we needed to think outside the box, because we were never an online business. So it was now our opportunity to move it online. So I suppose, you know, between Ian and I, there was a lot of time spent in the background creating. Now, we've been very lucky. We've fabulous people that we've worked alongside, which was Seamus Begley, who designed our website, and John Beasley, who did all of photography. So I suppose it was now the opportunity was now or never. So while we had the time in our hands and between ourselves and Seamus and John, we just said, OK, let's do it. And it has been, thankfully, a roaring success. And because all what they have done for us is they gave us an online shop that we would never have been able to do ourselves, if that made sense. So we needed the professionals. We could produce all the products, but we need someone to showcase them for us. So, you know, I mean, it was brilliant. And we needed that push, because I don't think it would have happened. So some good things have come out of COVID for us that has given us an online presence where we weren't as present as we should have been.
Yeah, but again, never waste a good crisis and all that. So what's next then? Where are the plans, Ian? Where do you want to see Lusso's chocolates displayed proudly over the course of the next few years?
Oh, well, I think a huge factor there, as Carol just said, or the online shop has become a huge success. And I suppose the next main thing coming up for ourselves would be Easter. We do a massive Easter trade now, thankfully, we have a lot of supportive customers who continuously come back to us year on year. And some of these are customers who used to go back 10 years, 12 years ago, going to Carol's father's door at 8 o'clock at night to pick up chocolate from him, and he'd have a cup of tea and a laugh with him. So there's some brilliant customers there. So we'll always continue down that trend. And we also, as well, we supply a lot of cafes and restaurants and bars with desserts as well. So that takes up, that's our day-to-day bread and butter outside of the heavy season. So thankfully, that's growing week on week and strength by strength. So we'll continue to push that as long as we can.
Well, look, lads, I am absolutely starving for a bit of chocolate now, and there isn't a bit anywhere near me, which is an absolute killer.
Never see you there.
We'll have to get sorted. Right, Carol Barry and Ian Kerrigan. What's the website, lads, if people need to find you?
LUSSOCORK.
.ie. Look, it's great, lads, and many happy years of marriage ahead of you, making all that chocolate and making the world a better place. Carol Barry and Ian Kerrigan, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much,
Danton. Thank you very much.
Great business with IBEC, building a sustainable, competitive future for Cork business.
Now, it is generally accepted by everyone in Cork that it's a great place to live and to work and to do business. But for my next guest, convincing others of how wonderful this city and county is, well, it's a full-time job. And not only does he have to promote Cork, he has to promote Ireland as a rule. Fergal O'Brien is IBEC's Director of Lobbying and Influence. How are you, Fergal?
Hello, Jonathan. How are you?
Obviously, it's easier to sell Cork than other parts of the country, isn't it?
There's a lot to sell. There's great opportunities and advantages for doing business as a place to live, work, and, of course, do business. It's got an awful lot to offer. But I suppose when we're engaging with government at the political level, with permanent government at a national level, and with local government, we're continuously trying to work with them as stakeholders and partners to try and improve the conditions for doing business. And I suppose one of the things that's really interesting, John, if you look at how kind of policy and our engagement with government from a business perspective has evolved, particularly probably over the last 5 years or so, and I think this is going to have accelerated during COVID times, is that quality of life is increasingly becoming actually a key metric for business. Because there was a time when corporates and businesses probably they took the decisions, you know, maybe in a corporate boardroom, right, as to where, you know, investment decisions were going to happen and where economic activity was going to be located. And the people followed. Now it's the talent, it's the individuals actually deciding on the basis of quality of life, on the basis of the public services, on the basis of the education, the health system, the built environment, the local domain, everything. They're deciding where they want to locate themselves. And the corporates are actually following. So increasingly, the kind of everyday issues that we all talk about as quality of life issues are becoming core business issues. And that's been a big change for the region, for Cork, and for a country in terms of how we promote and seek opportunities to improve ourselves.
Yeah, and the advent of broadband and proper connectivity means it's easier to do business now in a place like Cork than it would have been previously. Is that helping you when you are lobbying on behalf of client companies? That, you know, previously it might have been hard to try and convince somebody, well, you know, you can do business from West Cork, for example, or you can do business if you're living in North Cork or even in Cork City. It doesn't matter. The connectivity is much better than it used to be. You can hop on a Zoom call or you can get in a plane and get somewhere quickly.
We've obviously demonstrated over the last 2 years, Jonathan, that, you know, we can operate in all sorts of ways. So, yes, the digital connectivity is absolutely crucial. And companies just have a much more flexible attitude now in terms of where they're going to locate. So it is much more about the talent. That's actually the first question that every corporate is now going to ask when they're making kind of investment decisions. Look, whether they're an Irish company growing from an indigenous base or you're a multinational company coming into a location. Previously, they probably would have had a 16-minute map, right? And they would have said, you know, what number of people with certain skill sets can I get within the 60% commute time of Cork City? Whereas now they're looking at a much wider, they're casting that net much wider, and they will look at much longer distances from locations. But the traditional connectivity still matters. The infrastructure connectivity still matters. And it matters locally, right, in terms of that quality of life experience. It matters nationally in terms of how can we connect to other cities. And one of the key priorities for IBEC over the last number of years has been to try to get this much better balance of regional economic development between our East Coast and our West Coast. We have been far too reliant on the greater Dublin economy. You know, we've had over 40% of all our kind of economic activity happening inside that M50 in Dublin. And we've been arguing for a number of years that we really need to look at the opportunity of our Atlantic corridor. And I think what's happened in the last 2 years is probably going to do more for regional development than any government policy has in the previous 50. And the final piece then on the connectivity, and particularly crucial for a city region such as Cork, is the international connectivity, because that still matters. And again, we really felt that during the COVID times when people could not easily get on planes and go and see their customers or go and see their corporate headquarter folk. Mm. It became much more difficult, and it does impact relationships over time. And in other countries, in most other countries, they have other options. You know, they were able to get on trains and they were able to get into cars to see customers. We need in particularly that that aviation connectivity is absolutely crucial.
Well,
for
I mean,
us.
We are an island at the end of the day, so you have to get on and off. The good news, of course, at the start of this podcast was further expansion at Cork Airport, and fingers crossed more to come. About lobbying though, it has a bad reputation, Fergal, doesn't it? There is always a kind of sense of seediness, as if you're hanging around in a dark corner. But that's not how it works. It's about representing an interest to try and inform and in many ways sway policy that is to the benefit of everybody. But it's not often seen as that.
I don't think it sits comfortably with us in Ireland. That's for sure, Jonathan, and perceptions of lobbying and what lobbying is. It's our job. It's what we do as a business representative organisation. We day in, day out represent the views, the issues, the concerns of our members to government. But it's actually about partnership, and it's about joint problem solving. Because I suppose a good example would be when, again, the COVID crisis hit us, you know, almost over a weekend in March of 2020. One of the first things we were doing was sitting down with government, trying to figure out how could we offset the worst economic implications of it. And obviously, there was lots of focus on our health crisis at the time, but we also had an impending economic crisis. And government could only do that by listening to the real life experiences of business. And I think it was a very good example in terms of how working collaboratively between the on-the-ground reality. What we did design was around these labour market supports of the employer wage subsidy scheme, and government then rolled out the pandemic unemployment payments. And those policies were incredibly successful and effective. And our government actually took really bold decisions at the time. But they could only do that by having the practical insights from the practitioners and from business people through the kind of IBEC vice. So we need to explain, but we need to work in partnership, and that's the reality of what happens. And you know, this isn't about other perceptions of what lobbying is or isn't. This is the day-to-day work of trying to make the conditions better in the country.
And not only is it about conditions better, but there's big ticket items, things like sustainability, ESG. We've talked about it a lot in the podcast in the last couple of months. Companies are coming around to this a lot more. The G part is governance, which is important, but environmental and social are they're the big buzzwords. And state tends to be quite a distance behind. We've seen electric cars, for example, the consumer moving ahead of any expectation that the state might have. It's happening a lot more. And is it part of IBEC's responsibility to bring to government's attention, look, this is actually what's happening. You need to allow for this.
Yeah, absolutely, Jonathan. It's happening at such spectacular pace at the moment, and we have no doubt, you know, we've come from a period now again of these last 2 years where COVID and Brexit have probably dominated the landscape, and with no doubt but the single most important business issue for the years ahead is going to be that sustainability agenda, and specifically, as you mentioned, through that environmental, social and governance lens of the ESG. Almost every organization that we're talking to at the moment is, many of them, grappling with this, I think is fair to say. Some are on the journey. Some will think that they're probably well planned out in terms of, you know, how they're going to adjust to some of these requirements. But many others are struggling with it and trying to figure out what to do. But it's coming at them from a number of angles. In terms of their investors, obviously, the shift from shareholder to stakeholder capitalism. So in terms of their stakeholders and organizations now, it's a much more complex landscape. In terms of engagement with their employees, in terms of their financiers. They all want to see their ESG strategies, their sustainability strategies, their customers across their supply chain. So there's a lot of complexity coming to business. And in a way, as you say, government actually is probably struggling to catch up on some of this. One of the observations that we're probably seeing across IBEC is that this social pillar may well be the most crucial of them all, because while we have very ambitious national targets on the environmental sustainability, and we're clearly starting out on the road to achieve those by 2030 being a key milestone, and then beyond to 2050 in terms of carbon neutrality. But crucially, if the social pillar doesn't hold, then it's going to be very, very hard to deliver on those environmental targets. And I think the cost of living issues that have really come to the fore more recently is really bringing that out.
Yeah, and it's just a fascinating area. It's constantly evolving, and your job is to try and stay ahead of whatever trend, good or bad, is coming in the future. Fergal O'Brien, IBEX Director of Lobbying and Influence, absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Jonathan.
And that is it from this episode of the podcast. Stay tuned, though. We're going to give you a little bit of a sneaky listen to the latest episode of Red Business in Focus that is up right now on redfm.ie. It's a fabulous story about Benson's workwear from Middleton. But that's it for now. We'll catch you on the next one.
Get the Red Business podcast every week with Jonathan Healy at redfm.ie and wherever you get your podcasts. Red Business with IBEC, building a sustainable, competitive future for Cork business.
You're very welcome back to Red Business in Focus with Cork's local enterprise offices, where we're sharing Cork's success stories. This week, it's Benny Musa of Benson's Menswear. He's in the spotlight and he'll be chatting to us about his successful business and his passion for textiles. We're also going to be talking to him about how they stepped up during COVID-19 to put the community first in their business by stopping production of regular stock and then focusing their efforts instead on hospital gowns for the HSE. Benny, you are very welcome, sir. How are you?
Thank you. Very well. Thank you.
Lovely to meet you. As usual at the start, we've given you 30 seconds on the clock to tell us a little bit about the company. So 30 seconds, what do you do in Benson's Workwear?
Okay, my name is Benny Musa. I'm a fashion designer. I'm also creative director at Benson's Corporate Wear. We design and manufacture corporate uniforms for banks, airlines, supermarkets, hotels across Ireland, the UK and France. We have a team of textile experts and fashion designers and graphic designers. And we are changing the design of uniforms, if you like, by bringing fashion to the workplace.
Okay, now that's interesting because workwear traditionally tends to be a little boring and functional, right? So we're going to get to how you're changing in just a minute. But first of all, how did you end up working in this space? It's a kind of it's a specific area, if I could put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I grew up with five sisters. And so you can imagine the rest of the story.
I'm pretty much sure they used you as a fashion model, didn't they?
Absolutely, yeah. And tweaking dresses, and I was always inspired by fashion, what they wear, what they shop, and how they marry colors, and so on. So it was really interesting upbringing. My mother was obviously doing a bit of seamstress in here and there, and then two of my sisters went into silk printing, which was fascinating, and they used to do that all by hand. At the age of 16, then I was still in school, obviously. I got an interest in business, so I started mixing the two, fashion and business and textiles and printing, doing a bit of everything. I ended up with an established business. It was doing very well, where I used to design and print and make myself together with my two sisters the bands for seatbelts. So we would print the car brands on the seat belt.
Okay. So in other words, instead of just having a black seat belt, you could put the brand on it and you could pimp it out
absolutely
effectively.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Like for sports car mainly.
Yeah.
So I used to run across markets and car dealers and stuff like that and sell them. That was back home in North Africa. And then that took off. But then that took about 3 to 5 years to take off and to be built. By the time I reached 19 and a half, I found myself in London trying to, and I had a whole world in front of me as a designer. So I started working in London, sourcing for factories, designing for different textile companies, where I spent 11 years, built a lot of knowledge, met interesting people as well throughout my career, and then I came to Ireland with, I suppose, a business plan to open a textile factory.
And it's a funny industry because it can be quite hard to turn a profit from it, because it's clothing at the end of the day and it's fashion, which means you can be either in or out of fashion. When did you come up with the idea of creating durable, usable workwear? And I suppose branded workwear at that, because everybody likes to see their brand on their clothes.
Absolutely. I think when I was in London, definitely working and seeing, I suppose, what other people are making, what the possibilities are there, and seeing the gap in the market, and then mixing the knowledge that I gathered, making patterns, looking for the right fabric for certain certain sectors in the business. I thought, look, mixing the two will go hand on hand and very well. So by bringing the aspect of fashion into workplaces, be it a hospital, an airline, a bank, and so on, it can be as simple as schoolwear. Yeah. The two blended very well together.
One of the things about workwear, traditionally they would have been just functional. So in a hospital you had scrubs that could easily be washed, and then you might have a different colour for a different job in a hospital. They weren't particularly glamorous.
Yes.
That's changed now, hasn't it?
I agree. Yes, absolutely. All we know about, like, we're all used to, say, the workwear, as you said, a bit boring, a bit straight down. There's nothing fancy to it, nothing luxurious.
One size fits all. Kind of.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I suppose the vision of Benson's Corporate Wear is to break that pattern and to start giving people or the staff or the employees really the feel of what it's like to put on something you love to work. So it brings out confidence, empowers the employee, and a happy employee means a happy company and a happy family in a company, and it brings out the best out of people.
Let's go to March 2020, when the world changed for everybody with the global pandemic. I would imagine that you were sitting there like every other business owner going, what is this going to mean for me and for my business? Are people going to want workwear? Are they going to want all this kind of stuff? Yeah. Became quite apparent quite quickly that the health service needed help. So how did you move to help them?
Absolutely, Jonathan. I mean, just pre-pandemic, 2-3 months when we heard China was in trouble, in here I remember I called enterprise, a local enterprise office here, Mr. Joe Burke, and I said, I've always been known to him, I'm this go-get-it, and I'm this positive guy.
Just get it done.
Yeah, get it done. And this positive guy. Now I said to myself, now positive man, what are you going to do? Yeah. You know, there's no hotels, everything is shut down, there's no cafes, no restaurants. So we had to close for about 4 to 5 weeks while we were trying to pivot and get contracts in place with the HSE, because everything else, as you said, had stopped at the time. So we had to pivot very, very quickly, and that involved, when people were cocooning, we were in the factory in East Cork, cutting fabric, making patterns, responding to two.
So, as someone who was in the fashion sector,
yes,
you probably would never have deemed yourself an essential worker, but there you were, providing an essential service.
Absolutely. That's well said, Jonathan, because we had to actually request a letter from the HSE to allow us to be on the road. And we had, we were taking care of production in one hand, and then recruiting up to 43 employees. Most of them seamstresses, fabric cutters. Some had experience, and we were actually privileged and a bit surprised from the community and the response we got here in Cork. It was absolutely amazing. Everybody came together.
As the world is starting to straighten out now, Benny, what does that mean for your business? You obviously don't have to produce huge amounts of PPE and workwear for hospitals anymore, but what condition is the company in now to move forward, and where do you see growth for yourself?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I do believe personally, as a creative director of Benson's Corporate Wear, this is the best of times. I know it can be the worst of times as well for certain businesses and small businesses that unfortunately had closed down or had to struggle throughout the pandemic. The best of times in the sense that the world is opened again. Every business is opened again. There's a lot of opportunities. And what the pandemic has done, I suppose, on a psychological level that I've witnessed for small businesses, be it a hotel or a large enterprise like airlines and so on, it has changed their behavior, if you like. Where what I mean by that is people used to be, it's easier almost to go to the Far East and get something done and get your stuff imported, especially when it comes to the textiles. But then what the pandemic has done, it put a lot of pressure on delays. We all know that the logistics is 8 to 10 times more expensive now, which puts us as manufacturing in Ireland in a much stronger position. So we're able to respond and change the habits of those businesses.
And as the world changes then, Benny, does that impact on quality? Because if prices go up everywhere else and you're trying to produce your product, how is it going to be different to what's produced in other parts of the world?
Absolutely. I think as manufacturers here in Ireland, where we're heading is towards sustainability. So by manufacturing here in Ireland, we're already cutting down 40% of carbon. So without going into the details of sourcing fabric and the sustainable route for businesses, I think people will appreciate paying a euro or two more per garment if you're buying a suit. I think we all agree to support Irish businesses as one and to support to save our environment as a priority as well.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure and a great journey. Benny Moussa, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Now, join us next week when we'll be joined by Carol Kendellan from Basil Market and Deli. Carol is going to fill us in on her successful business and will share her story about pivoting the food sector during COVID to develop the e-commerce side of the house. See you next week on Red Business in Focus with Cork's local enterprise offices.